This recording is a production of Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2015 in Withville, Virginia, March 6 through 7.
Okay, well, good afternoon. You shouldn't feel too alone now, should you? There's a lot of people around us. Can you hear me okay back there? It feels like you're really far away. So I'm going to try to overcome. I just feel like I can't connect with you, but just try to, we'll stay tuned in here, okay? You're a very long distance away from me here. I would like to first, before we really get going, I want to understand the demographics. Who do we have here? Principals, raise your hand. If you're a school principal, so you're about a third of the group. Okay, pastors. You might raise your hand more than once. Pastors, okay. And then board members. Do the rest of you. Okay, so about half. Okay, all right. I like to begin here by asking you a question. What role or roles do you play that no one else carries in your school? What are things that you do that no one else does that are your job? What are those things? Okay. So you're a school principal. No, you have to organize and chair a meeting. Your staff doesn't do that, and your board doesn't do that as regularly as you do even. What are other things that you do that no one else does?
Review curriculum, make changes to
things for your year. When you start talking about curriculum, do people know immediately what you're talking about and the work it takes, you think, to figure out what we should do for math or whatever? Do you think the rest of your church feels that?
Pretty simply, just
open a catalog and
order.
Okay. What about hiring staff? A few board members? Who else hires staff in your church? It's you. I really am only trying to point out here that there are things in your arenas of responsibility that you and only you do. There are decisions you have to make that you have to take responsibility for that no one else can do for you. If you're a minister, there are some things that you will do that no one else will do. It is up to you to do those things. And so the nature of leadership is one of stepping forward and actually leading. And the nature of it is such that no one else is going to do it, because after all, you're the one who is to lead. How many in your community, how many, if you're a school principal, raise your hand. Okay. In your community within 20 miles, keep your hands up, how many of you have another principal who lives within 20 miles of you? Christian Day School principals. Is that number, I don't know if you're noticing or not, the number changed dramatically. If that's true, yeah. All right, now of those of you who say you have within 20 miles of your, how many of you see them and talk with them once a month? We're down to one. Okay. Put your hand down. Does that begin to tell us a little bit about the nature of our work? You know, over the years, there have been times as school principal that I have felt invigorated and alive and ready to roll. And there are other years in which a lot of what I do feels like it's duty and I must get it done and I have to I have to buck up. And so leadership always brings with it ebbs and flows. Some years I felt underappreciated at best and unappreciated at worst. Other years I can feel the gratitude of the church and the community in what I do. But no year is exactly the same. I wouldn't trade my work for any other work. I love what I do. In fact, I chose. Some of you board members and ministers didn't have much say-so. You got elected or you were nominated and ordained or whatever your situation is. School principals, we do have a choice. It can feel like there's not much of a choice at times. But we do have a choice, and it is a tremendous opportunity. But that does not mean that there's no price tag attached to leadership. And so I'd like to begin here by looking at the high cost of leadership. To aspire to leadership in the kingdom does require us to be willing to pay a price higher than others will need to pay. If you're truly leading, the toll, the price you pay can be quite stiff sometimes. Sometimes I think the more effective our leadership, the more weight and the more we feel some of these things. Quentin Hogg, who was the founder of the London Polytechnic Institute, he had a fortune of money, and he took a bankrupt college and restarted it, and it turned into a great institution in London. Someone asked him how much it had cost to build that back from the rubble, and he said, not very much, simply one man's lifeblood. So I want to say here at the beginning that a cross stands in the path of leadership and the leader must take it up. That's biblical. 1 John 3:16, Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. To the degree the cross is across our shoulders and over our back, so the resurrection life of Christ is manifest through us. No cross, no leadership. And so we take that cross willingly, I hope, and the cross is something we do with joy. When the Bible talks about taking up your cross, it talks about hardship, but it talks about the great rewards that come with leadership. Okay? I'm applying this to leadership. There's a lot of joy in that. The Christian life has a lot of reward in it just by taking up your cross and following Jesus. So I want to just remind us of a few of those things. Because the leader is always ahead of his followers, he lives with a certain sense of loneliness. Not aloneness, but a little sense of loneliness. Now, I understand that we're with our staff, we're with the people we serve. I understand that, but at the end of the day, where does the buck stop? We have to get in our heads. It's what I do, it's I'm the one being held accountable. If it doesn't go right, the board holds me accountable for what didn't go right. It's my problem, my work. And so I do need to be leading. You might even be a people person. I personally enjoy people and talking with people and meeting with people. And I find, even though I am a people person, you could say, there are areas in which I have to walk things alone. Maybe we could say like this. When Dixon Hoste felt loneliness when Hudson Taylor retired, and he was given the leadership of China Inland Missions, Hoste said after the appointment, "And now I have no one. No one but God." When he felt the weight of his responsibility, he knew that it's not all going to be about the people around me. There's a weight, a responsibility, but there is a God who will step in, who is there for us. Now, we naturally enjoy and need the company of others, I'm going to say. And we want to share the heavy burden of responsibility and care. That's natural. However, there are just times when we have to step forward. And when we do so, there's a certain amount that we bear alone. Part of what I'm trying to say here is it's the nature of the thing. So, just a few examples. Moses, when he was alone on the mountain, right? He was by himself, wasn't he? He was alone on the plain. He was misunderstood over and over. He was criticized soundly for his terrible leadership. Who was with him? Of course, Jehovah God, but who are the people with skin on around him? Enoch walked alone in a very decadent society as he preached judgment. And his compensation was the presence of God. That's pretty amazing. What about Jonah? He got to be alone in a very vast Nineveh. It was a heathen city of 1 million people. And how many people are preaching repentance in the city of Nineveh? Paul was a gregarious man. He was lonely. He was misunderstood by his friends pretty often. He's misrepresented by his enemies, sometimes deserted by converts. 2 Timothy 1, Paul writes, "You know that everyone in the province of Asia has deserted me." Which was more what he was feeling than the reality, okay? But the point is, that seems to be part of leadership. A.W. Tozer said, most of the world's greatest souls have been lonely. Loneliness seems to be the price a saint must pay for his saintliness. And so the leader must be a person who, while welcoming the friendship and support of everyone who offers it, has to have sufficient inner resources to stand alone, even when it feels like it's just God and I. Where are the people with skin on around me? I'd like to now look at maybe some reasons why we get lonely. Let's be a little bit honest about this now. There are reasons we get lonely. Sometimes I think it helps identify a few of those kinds of things. One of the reasons you will get lonely, by the way, you'll really experience some stuff, is when you make large changes too quickly. All of a sudden, you're hung out to dry here almost. You had this great idea. None of the rest of you had these great ideas you got to work on right now. I mean, I love new ideas and want to work on them right now. But you know what? That's a way to isolate yourself, too. People aren't with you. So making large changes too quickly is a way to immediately experience loneliness. You'll be lonely if you wait for people to appreciate you. If that's what it's taking, we're going to have issues. Faking who we are. Shutting others out. There are times we don't really want the input of others. We're not sure we know what to do with it if we do get their feedback. sharing conclusions rather than processes. That's a way to get lonely. When you go ahead and you describe, here's the way to do it, but there's no process to get there. It's you take my idea or leave it. That will isolate you. It'll pull you out from the group. Not building a support network. I'm going to come back to a few of these. Not building a support network. In my experience as a school principal, my primary support network was in the board and primarily vested in the chairman. When the chairman, I took special care. The chairman and I would go out for breakfast once a month. I want to know the chairman. I want the chairman to know me. That's my support network. Now, who's going to be with the chairman? Now the chairman's all feeling all alone and brokenhearted, and now what? Maybe you should take the pastor out. You have things to talk about. You have lots of things to talk about. You're working for him, aren't you? Expecting agreement and rejecting disagreement will isolate you. It will create some of these feelings that we have. You just assume everyone will get on board with your great ideas. And if someone disagrees with me, I won't hear that. Not good. Believing as leaders we are omniscient and omnipotent. I know, a little bit of exaggeration there, but it is easy when you're in charge to start feeling like you sort of know what's going on, and you know, and you can sort of be everywhere and do everything. And it's not true. You spread yourself so thin you become invisible. Which means you start to feel very lonely. Because you aren't the only, there's only one being that's omniscient and omnipresent, and it's not you. I'll just let you know. But we can sort of operate this way. Using people for selfish reasons will isolate you. Because we are in charge. We have a certain level, amount of, can we be honest about this? Certain level of power in our hands. We can do certain things that other people can't do. You can do things your staff can't do. That's just how it is. I can decide to go out with my chairman during the school day over lunch instead of at breakfast before school starts, and I don't have to ask the teachers whether or not that's okay. Teachers have to ask you if it's okay if they go out for the chairman for lunch. You don't have to. You can use people selfishly in the process of leading. You'll be lonely if you don't build a culture of ownership where it's our school. It's all of us together. When we invest more in projects and programs than in people, the heart of a school is its people. Buildings are important. Programs are important. But the most significant asset we have are the people. If you make your leadership about programs and efficiency and getting things done, and you leave the people behind, you will find yourself very lonely. There are legitimate reasons for loneliness, I think, at times. I just mentioned a few. There are times when I feel like I care about things that it seems other people don't care about. I really want our students to fill in the blank. And I really care about that. I think it's important. But not everyone sees it that way. I think that you might just have to be a little alone there. I feel most isolated when people I care about make negative assumptions about my motives. That ever happened to you? People think they know why you decided this or that, and maybe it wasn't even in your heart. And you sort of know that I was misunderstood there. I didn't mean that at all. There might be truth to it. I don't know. But I think there are times when we are perceived in ways that we did not intend. And one more area is that of keeping in confidence conversations or situations that must be kept confidential. One of the reasons you'll feel lonely is because you cannot say everything you know. You can't say everything you know to the staff. You can't say everything you know. You can't talk about things. One of the reasons why leadership is often difficult, think about your, I hope you, when you leave here, you think about your ministers in a different light, maybe, nothing else. They cannot talk about a lot of things. They have to hold some of that. There's some things that absolutely, I'm not talking about not being transparent. Actually, there's some things that aren't appropriate at a certain stage to talk about. That starts to make you feel pretty lonely, actually. But you just can't talk about it. There is a tendency, by the way, principals especially, to share with your staff more than is truly helpful to solve issues. You want to get them on board, and so we share in love, you know, things so that they can sort of see our side and we can work on this together. But I think we can cross a line when we say more than what we actually ought to say. I think some of these are, I say, legitimate here, all right? It's not that these are completely illegitimate. It's that I think it's the way we live as leaders has a lot to do with what we actually feel. And so I'd like for us to look at a few ways forward here. I talk to enough men in leadership. I talk to women who are heads of schools as well. They might not have all the titles, but that's functionally what they're doing. And they're experiencing a lot of weight. And I just realize how often I talk with people about this particular issue. They feel so alone. So I'd like to suggest a few ways we could move forward. First, be who you are. When you fake it, it drains you. We want to be well-liked. We want people to respect us. And we sometimes have ideas. Oh, I want to be like so-and-so. I just like what the vibes I get from him. And I'm just going to emulate him. I'm going to make that the way I do things. It's not going to work. Faking drains you. You have to be you. Take time to reflect. When you stop and think and reflect, it brings perspective to the issues that are facing you. We tend to live by the moment. It's what I feel. And sometimes we step back and just evaluate. Okay, this is what's going on. This is what people are saying. And I think they have my best interests in mind. And we just pause long enough to try to understand what really is going on. It's a way forward. You must take time. I've been pushed really hard. As I did a leadership cohort in which there were 6 sessions that we just worked on leadership issues in Ohio. And I was doing this. One of the things that got pushed really hard in my group was they said, you have to take a day off per month to think and reflect and plan and get perspective. Whoa, I said, actually, I teach school. I don't know how I would do that. They backed off on that to say once a quarter. And I plan to do that starting next year, which has been 3 years in the making. But it was some older seasoned men telling me that too. So I'm paying attention though. There is a lot of activity, a lot of things going on. And even right now, if I were to open up your brain, I would find 5 more things in there that you're thinking about right now as I'm talking that you should be doing and that you're not because you're sitting in here listening to this. There's a lot going on. And you always have more than you can do. And so there's no time to actually get perspective on what it is I ought truly to be doing. What is important? What matters? Who am I? Who am I becoming? Is the constant flurry of grading papers, if you're a principal, you're grading papers, you're prepping for classes, and oh, by the way, Johnny threw up in the hallway, and, you know, and on it goes. There is your mind, you're always, you've got so much you're thinking about in so many areas. I think taking time to reflect gives us appropriate ways to look at ourselves. You know what? The school can do without you for a day, for a quarter, I'm pretty sure. I mean, they're having school. Some of you are here and you're having school. It's possible. I think it's a bigger deal than I've given it credit for. I told the group, I said, one of the issues here is that I feel bad for my staff because they're in the trenches day in, day out, and if they said, hey, I want to go take some time to think. I said, well, man, we got to get a substitute. We got, you know, maybe we should rethink even how we think about that. I don't know. Someone told me, one of the older, wiser men said, actually, you're upfront about what you're about what you're doing, they will respect you more than just to keep the constant flurry of activity hanging on for dear life, day in, day out. He said, don't worry about it. Now, I'm about to find out if that's true or not. Okay. I think this is a big deal. Getting away alone helps us to be less lonely in the big scheme because of how much perspective it gives to our work. Listen to those who don't agree with you and examine your own passions and motivations with honesty. That is easier to talk about than to do. What drives you as a leader? You weren't sure if I should talk a little bit ago about the issue of power, did you? Sounds kind of bald, and we don't want power. Or sometimes are we glad we're in charge, not somebody else, so that we can do it the way we want to do it? I mean, can we just be honest about our own motivations that are twisted by the fall? I hope we become more and more redeemed, but the fact is, it's easy to go here. Where I just talk to people that I know will be my yes man. Oh, we think that's a great idea. That way I don't have to examine who I really am with any sense of honesty. If you don't have people in your life that are disagreeing with you, you're in a dangerous position. Always keep somebody around you that's going to push on you and say, are you sure about that? And by the way, that's a pain. It just is. It takes energy. It takes something out of you. But you need somebody that won't agree with you all the time. I'm not saying they can't ever agree with you. I'm saying someone who actually, are you sure about that? So I'm made to think of a story. And when we started a school in Indiana, it was one of the great joys of my life, actually. As a delight. What an opportunity. Clean slate, not even ground broken. Bought some property in the edge of town. Got annexed to the cities. We have city water, sewer. And we built a building. And we had to figure out what curriculum. And we didn't have a handbook. And we had, it was, It was called Training on the Fly, but it was invigorating. Okay, so much possibility. And there were a number of things that I had visions for. And if I'm ever part of something that starts, then I really want to have A, B, C, D, E, because it would make our school better. And I cannot tell you how many times the board disagreed with some of my, looking back, harebrained ideas that in the moment seemed perfectly reasonable. And I've often wondered what would have happened if they would have been yes men. What would have happened? I don't think that school would be doing very well today, is my assumption. There were times, well, I'll tell the story that follows that one in a moment. Build a support network. That's one of the things you ought to do. Principals, you should go out with your board chairman. You really should. Or board member. You should do that. As principal, there was two people that I regularly went out for breakfast with. The bishop or minister and the board chairman. Every month. It was a support network that was immensely helpful to me. And here's what's interesting. I found out that, now I was young and inexperienced. I should have never been in charge at school. I was, you know, I won't even tell you how old I was because I wasn't old enough to do this, right? I was 24. I have no idea why they hired me. No idea. When I look back, I just shiver. You ever think about things 20 years back? It kind of makes you come up for air a little bit, doesn't it? You mean that I did that? How'd they have that much confidence? One of the things that happened, though, was that by knowing the minister, the bishop, in my case it was a bishop, Wade Burkholder, I met regularly with that man, with their chairman, had a support network, they felt free to push back on me, and I felt free to ask them questions. Well, is there a good reason why that wouldn't work? Or one of the parents suggested this at school. What do you think of that? I got tremendous amount of good feedback. Principals, secret. People won't come take you out for breakfast. Don't worry about it. Go take them out. Now, that's a blanket statement. It's not fair to some of you who may be doing that. I'm saying you need to be proactive. Don't make it everyone else's problem. You take hold. And you say, well, I want connection. And I'm going to find ways to make that connection happen. You wait for the connection to come to you, it won't come. That's been my experience. You have to go seek it. Make it your responsibility. Add it to your own job description. I don't know. But you need to make that happen. I firmly believe in the support network. I think this is the piece that we've often disconnected in school life. We've disconnected schools and churches way too far. And one of the ways we need to bring that back is to become personally and relationally connected to your authorities. Create a culture of ownership. One of the things that I think is critical in our schools is that we talk about it as our school. Our school. Not his school or the school. Our school. And the more you can embed the idea of ownership into your school, the less isolated you will be. I love it when I hear young people say, well, I was going to our church last night. Oh, good, our church. Glad to hear it. Those words are more important than we think they are, I think. Our church, our school. Engage others in the process. Don't go solo. So one of my goals was in our high school that everyone would have a speech class and a composition class. How much time do I have here? What time does the next session start? Four? Okay. All right, thank you. Don't go solo. So I had this idea that one of the things I cared about was communication. I think it's helpful in church life if our students can offer a devotional in church, and it makes sense. I think that's helpful. I've got 10 minutes left, right? Okay. So we'll have, okay. Thank you. So I felt like that was critical in the life of the church. I want writers and communicators. And so I felt like that should be a requirement in the high school. And I was willing to lobby for it. I created a sheet, pros and cons. Here's the problems with having a speech class. Here's the pros. There's lots of those. And composition class, same way, this small, I couldn't think of many reasons not to, but I could think of a lot of reasons too. And I had this all laid out, gave it to the board. They looked at it and said, well, you should offer it as an elective, but it shouldn't be a requirement. I didn't have a category for that. What? You know, you would want students coming out of the school to be able to communicate. It was a lesson in don't go solo. I had talked to nobody about this. You know, our chairman knew that I was going to present that. But I had not talked. I hadn't created any kind of networking about this. I hadn't said, what do you think of this? Instead, it was cons, pros, let's go. It was shot down that fast. 2 years later, we're looking at the graduation requirements, and wouldn't you know, one of the board members said, you know, why don't we have speech and composition as requirements in the school? Well, that's a good point. What's going on here? You know, why don't we make a requirement? Would you care? No, I wouldn't care. Well, they voted on it right there. It came out of a series of things that were happening. They felt this would be very good to include this. Now I'm not going solo, right? Now it's together. And what's interesting is, so that happened, and then suddenly I had middle-aged men coming to me saying, I'm really glad you've got speech class in here. You know, I just noticed that the 18-year-olds are doing better than us 45-year-olds in making in doing a devotional. We think that's really helpful for the church. Thanks for doing that. I had speech class before. Something about the buy-in, something about the fact that we were all together in this, and so they were looking at it, they were seeing it differently, and suddenly it made sense. Oh, wow, that's a great thing. Thanks. Don't confide in the wrong people. They're not part of the solution or the problem. Relax. I think this is a big deal. I think it's easy to confide in the wrong people. One of the reasons why I went out for breakfast with people that were authorities in my life was because those were appropriate places to ask questions and to say, I'm struggling here. Can you help me? They were my authorities. They were responsible. It was a safety net. That way I was being heard somewhere. I didn't feel an urge to tell people that didn't need to know things. I wasn't doing that. I wasn't going around talking all the time because I had a place to talk. If you have a spouse, find a balance with the amount of information and detail you share. For spouses, it's a really, really big deal how you talk about the issues that your husband faces. And the community will lose confidence in the man's leadership if wives are not handling information well. And so think about how much detail, what's important to know to where there's transparency and good collaboration between husband and wife. But there are times not every single detail needs to be. It doesn't help describe the issue, maybe. But might be a hot button for your wife. Maybe it'd be better to bring it up in 3 weeks. Because at the moment, there was just been a little clash between her and another lady in church on something very similar to this. Think about how we're going to talk about this with our spouses. This is related to other things I've been talking about, seeking a mentor. I think that's important. You must be proactive. Principles, as a rule, wait for people to come to them. And you will be waiting until Jesus comes back. Just go ahead and say, I need some help. I'd like to meet. I need help. I want to hear. I want to learn. Seek out people who can do that for you. Protect your team, your staff, from experiencing the effects of your frustration and loneliness. Don't dump your frustration on their shoulders. Don't make it their problem. You want people to carry it with you. Your staff is the wrong group to do that with. And protect your heart from bitterness. In times of extreme loneliness, and when we just wonder if anybody's catching on here, it's easy to let our hearts grow bitter. Nobody understands me. Nobody knows what I have to put up with every day. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Nobody. But Jesus, the song goes. And so don't allow your leadership to make you arrogant or bitter. Guard your heart closely. Protect your heart from making assumptions about people. Here's the one thing I've learned about leadership, or I'm trying to learn. People actually, for the most part, are for you. You just don't always feel the vibes. They're actually for you. They're not out to get you. So when you have issues that come up, if you allow that root of bitterness to start growing, and you just can't let that thing rest, it really will isolate you. You will become a lonely leader. You will. You've got a root of bitterness, and that will cut you off from fellowship that you desperately need. Another final way forward here is share your loneliness with God. Actually, you can talk to him about that. He gets it. Jesus gets that. So maybe I just say a few things here. Recognize that loneliness is good. It's good. Because it's a reminder to us that we are not complete without him and other people in our lives. We actually need each other. It's a reminder. It's our response to loneliness where we go wrong. Our culture gives us many answers to the problems of loneliness. It looks to drugs, pornography, activity for the sake of activity, earbuds in the ear, 24/7, entertainment options unmatched to this point, from YouTube to sports to you name it, digital addictions, technology solutions to connect us to each other. Or do they? Globalization through the internet. I can make friends anywhere now. Hobbies. Immerse myself in my work. It's our culture gives us a lot of ways to deal with what we feel as leaders. And I found it helpful to think about how easily I can go off track. How I can give in to things that are negative. Looking to Jesus. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory. The glory is of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And so Jesus entered into our human experience, and He wants to do that for us today. He really does. He's going to do that often through people around us. When loneliness comes to us, we can either embrace the world's solutions that brings superficial connection. And on the surface, make them seem like the real answer, or we can entrust ourselves to the Father. I think what I'm calling for here today is, men, we have to find our identity in Jesus first. But it has to work itself out in real life too. What's it mean? And that's where this connection with people, some of those ways forward we have, I think are important. We need God. It reminds us that we need God. Loneliness reminds us of that. We learn to love Him more deeply when we turn to Him. And so I'm asking us to develop a pattern and a way of life that recognizes loneliness as a reminder of how important Jesus is to our experience as leaders. Jesus gets leadership when it's really hard, too. God gives us loneliness to remind us that we need other people. We need Jesus, and we do need people. And one of the things that I've found here, maybe I'll just say, that when it comes to people, when I'm feeling lonely, one of the best antidotes to loneliness is to ramp up how well I serve them. And it ties me back into them. If you feel all alone, think about new ways you could serve them. Gentlemen, part of what I'm saying is we can get self-focused. And life begins to revolve around us and our leadership. And that will create loneliness. But we weren't intended to walk that way. That wasn't the way that's been offered to us. So I'm encouraging us here, find your identity in Jesus and connect with other people, especially your authority in your life. You will find great joy in pursuing relationship with other men.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders Educational Programs. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.